Welcome to the Stranger Still podcast. I'm Kathleen.
And I'm Miles.
And we are here podcasting from the ocean, the Pacific Ocean, be exact, here in the Pacific Northwest. And we're loving the vibe here. The house we're in is like super set in the 90s, maybe a decade later than Stranger Things. Yeah. But it's definitely nostalgic for us. So it's totally getting us in the mood to podcast Stranger Things today.
That's what I love about the ocean towns. They're always like a couple of decades behind. We've got these walls of VHS tapes, you know.
I know. It's the perfect vibe. All right. If you like our show, please follow us at StrangerStill22 on Twitter. We're also on TikTok and Facebook, Stranger Still Rewatch Podcast. Subscribe, review on Spotify, Anchor, Apple, wherever you listen to your podcast.
Check out every show. It is literal gold transmitted into the airwaves.
We are so good. What can I say? This year, we've got planned 11 episodes. What we're going to do is one episode for each main character, following that character through seasons 1 through 4. Yeah. We've not yet finished that rewatch. We're still kind of working on that, but we have completed season 1. So we've got some good insight on Joyce, who we're going to be starting
with. We'll start with Joyce, yeah.
Yeah, but today we're going to be talking about what if Stranger Things ended after season 1.
A topic that fascinates me endlessly. We talked about a little bit in the rewatch, but I'm excited to dive into it.
My favorite season, really.
Your favorite season is season 1.
Yep, yeah, absolutely.
And I'm talking about why that is, too, is interesting to me.
Yeah.
I really like that you glossed over what has really happened, which is that we are not ready to do the 11 episodes.
No.
We clearly came on vacation after only watching one season.
Don't worry. We're working on it, folks.
Yeah, we're making it.
It's in the works. Yeah,
this was all part of the plan, folks. No, but it is a nice opportunity. We watched season 1 recently, and now we're going to talk about it. It's our first time rewatching since season 4.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to talk about.
I know. And it's amazing. Like, I feel like every time you rewatch it, you just like you get new insights. It's just really cool.
Well, before we get into our main subject, let's go through some
news. So there's a new stage show, a play coming out. The First Shadow is going to be opening in London in December. Super pumped about this. So it's set in the 1950s. It's going to feature storylines including Jim Hopper, Joyce Maldonado, which is her maiden name, which I didn't even catch that. And of course, our beloved Bob Newby. They're going to be in high school, but it's also going to have the show's current villain, Henry Creel. What do we think about this?
Well, number one, I'm excited that it's 1959 because I've always praised, especially season 1 of Stranger Things, for not being pure 80s, but being the 50s. 30 years later.
Yeah, you know, that's just true.
That's the small town Indiana feel. They're stuck
kinda
in the 50s.
Stuck old school, yeah.
So kind of going back into their heyday, you know, I like it.
Yeah, I'm pretty pumped about it. Will it, I mean, like how much can we get from the high school age Jim, Joyce, and Bob? Mm. Like, I don't feel like we're going to be able to get a huge contribution towards our Upside Down or anything like that.
Yeah, like towards the main plot. Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, but Henry Creel, though, so it's going to kind of go through his transformation to evil, I suppose, right?
It will be really interesting. I don't know how deep are we going to go into Henry's life. You know, it's kind of like a Monster on a Hill story with, we already know the result of the monster. You know, the Creel murders.
Oh,
you
know, yeah.
Like, Eddie's uncle, basically, when he's talking to Nancy in season 4, he says, you know, everybody in my generation knew about the Creel murders. And I feel like that line is this play.
Yeah. I forgot about that. It's almost like, what would it be, our Ted Bundy?
Yeah. Or, just for a generation that marked them. But you're right. I mean, Hopper, Joyce Maldonado... It is so weird. They bring her maiden name up once. Bob Newby like says it. I can't believe I'm making out with Joyce Maldonado or something. He does say
in the
it.
Closet. It's got to be that closet scene.
but they can't find out anything. Like they absolutely cannot get a whiff of the upside down, like you were saying.
Yeah. Also, filming, second piece of news, filming is supposed to start for Stranger Things season 5 sometime soon. I'm doing air quotes here because when is it really going to start? Noah, he's got the first 3 scripts, but David Harbour says June? I mean, does it really matter? Well, how come we're waiting so long?
My hope of why we've been waiting so long is that they had to align the schedules because the characters and the actors are truly together for most of the season.
Gosh, that's I hope that's the case.
And I feel like that is what's happening. There's a lot of shows who can just copy and paste stuff together and work around the actors' schedules. They needed to wait for the actors' schedules and potentially some of the directors' schedules to line up. Because COVID did a number for all contracts and plans.
What are your hopes for this new season? I hope that they're going to jump through time.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like jump ahead so that they'll be older.
Yeah, because now they're even, you're right. Now they've gone 10 years in real life. But like, I guess I do hope that they grow older, that they jump. That they jump to,
or at least seniors in high school.
Yeah, I am honestly hoping for senior year, which is 3 years or 2.5 year jump.
Yeah.
I think it's possible. Some people say that season 4 ended and you can't do a time jump. I absolutely disagree.
What?
All the
How can you not? All
the army, well, because the crack opened and the smoke is billowing out and people say you can't move on from that. The army needs one flamethrower and they will be fine. Because that's what Murray did to kill the bats off of Eddie from Russia. The Upside Down is very defeatable right now with any type of flamethrower. The story of season 5 will be about the hive mind, about separating the hive mind and becoming a bigger threat.
Okay. I don't know if it's going to take just the one flamethrower, but I like where you're going with this. Okay.
And I think we can pretty much stop giving film updates. You know, I know I'm the one who put this in here, not chastising you, but I want to remind everybody that all the filming updates that you get and the script updates and the leaks and stuff like that, just remember that their motivation is different than your motivation. This comes from my football podcast. They need you to look. They need you to click. They need you to listen. They need you to watch their video.
Stay engaged.
That's their motivation, not to keep you accurately informed. You have different motivations, and just always remember that. And if you're playing fantasy football, remember that as well.
And on that note, let's go the Stranger Writers released, which is that season 5 is like if season 1 and 4 had a baby, and then that baby was injected with steroids. So is this another clickbait, or do you think this is pretty accurate?
This is accurate. I mean, they're messing with us. That's super vague. But I mean, what is that statement conjure up for you?
Well, I hope it means that a lot of the themes that we got in season 1 are going to be really prevalent in this season. I don't know. I had a hard time with season 4, the way they changed like the dynamic of the Upside Down and with Henry Creel being the main villain. So I'm interested to see how that develops.
Yeah, I think I take this the way a lot of people are taking this, which means we're getting back to the core character groupings. All the cinematography and epic scope of season 4 with your beloved groupings of season 1. Mike, 11, Dustin, Lucas together. Jonathan, Nancy, Steve together. That's what I take it as. But take them with a grain of salt too. I retweeted something a while ago. And I don't know why I'm taking such a scholarly tone about this. I retweeted something a while back. The Duffer brothers, in between season 2 and season 3, in an interview, said that season 3 would be calmed down in scale compared to season 2. Okay? It was the exact opposite, folks.
Yeah, so lies. Just, pure lies.
Everything is all smoke screens,
people. Anything can happen.
Anything can happen.
All right. Well, that is it for the news. Let's pause and go to a quick 1980s commercial break, and we will be right back.
Now playing on Coleco. television. Donkey Kong, the all-time classic arcade game, keeps getting better. It comes as a bonus with ColecoVision. Donkey Kong Jr., the award-winning superstar video game of the year on ColecoVision. Zaxxon, the supreme three-dimensional deep space arcade adventure against an arsenal of enemies on ColecoVision. And get a $50 vacation certificate free with the purchase of any two Coleco video game cartridges. The classic arcade hits are now playing on ColecoVision. The best game in town keeps getting better.
All right, we are back with our Stranger Things podcast reviewing What If Season 1 Was It. Oh. Miles, you want to get started with this?
Yeah, so the scenario that we're talking about is the Duffer Brothers, they end their story here with only 1 8-hour movie. There's no expectation for Season 2. I'm even going to expand it out to say that the Stranger Things Season 1 actually doesn't have much of that epilogue. So no Eleven in the woods getting Eggos from Hopper. Yeah. No Will coughing up a worm. It's just a happy ending with an epilogue maybe of, you know, the Christmas time and the kids playing in the dungeon. Dustin right. farted. Dustin farted. You know, and that's it.
Yeah.
So what if that were the case? What would we think about these things? And I got 7 things that I wrote down that I kind of want to just discuss. And the first thing is the upside down.
All right. So if season one was it, the upside down, what would that be? Is basically what you're asking?
Yeah. Like we would think of the upside down much differently. We just rewatched it, right?
Yeah.
And it doesn't fit. I mean, is that inaccurate to say? Like, if season 2, 3, and 4 brings us the mind flayer, brings right. us the hive mind, brings us Vecna and Henry Creel and the reveal, does that really make sense with what we see the Demogorgon doing in season 1?
You know, I almost think it fits better because it just gives you that level of mystery. Like, we don't really need to know everything about the Upside Down or why it was created. What we get in the season one is that the Upside Down is like a backwards upside down version of the, you know, their current world. And that's all we really need to know, is that it's like a dark evil version. Mm-hmm. To me, that's all you really need. And so I think it stands on its own quite well. I think having the other seasons actually changes it.
Yeah.
So we have more questions with the other seasons.
As we have to learn about the upside down, it makes it more difficult.
Yeah.
And I do agree with you that if there was no other season than season one, upside down would just be, you know, a general vague supernatural element out there. Mm-hmm. Very Stephen King.
Yeah.
You know, who is a main influence on all of Stranger Things. It's slightly supernatural. There's no appendices about the properties of the stuff. It just serves the story.
Yeah.
Now we're getting stuff where, like, rewatching season one, I'm honestly like, what exactly is that Demogorgon doing? When it's like coming through the wall at Joyce, like, right. is that a gate? Why is the wall all mushy? How is it disappearing in a snap?
Right.
You know, if it's a gate, it doesn't all make sense. I mean, the real answer is they didn't really know all this stuff ahead of time.
Well, haven't you said they really had no expectation that they were going to be able to make more seasons, right?
Until they were in it. Yeah. Until they were already doing it. Our good friends, the Upside Down podcast, they had another one of our good friends, Ashley from Ham Radio, on, and they did like a whole hour of talking about the Upside Down. Oh, and it's super fun.
It's so easy to
check it out. And there's so many theories and stuff that you can get.
Yeah, really cool theories. It just gives you a lot more insight into like what could possibly happen.
Exactly. But even they, in the middle of talking about this, did have to say every question answered brings more questions. And I think that's where you get, you know, kind of it's harder to tell a story on a larger scale. And I think if it was just season one, the upside down would be thought of it's a little bit more vague. It's a little bit more,
it's more ambiguous.
Yeah, it's like the Force in Star Wars. People said they wanted answers, but when George Lucas put the midichlorians thing out there in the prequels, people were upset. First of all, because they didn't understand it.
I didn't even know that.
People were pissed about the midichlorians in the Phantom Menace. And they also didn't understand it. I mean, I know I'm repeating myself, but midichlorians are cells within a body that also feel the Force and allow someone to conduct the Force.
We're morphing into a Star Wars podcast.
Because, I know, but I'm just trying to say.
No, I totally get it.
Because
yeah.
it surrounds, the Force surrounds us, binds us, you know, puts us all together, it unites us all in being and matter. Midichlorians are part of that. They are not the Force. The Force right. is not midichlorians. This is a rant I can go on at a different time, and I apologize. But my larger point is that people think they want answers, but they maybe don't.
Yeah, I know. I like the idea of the upside down being more ambiguous. Like, we don't need to know everything, yeah. which also repeating myself. But yeah, I don't know. I think it stands on its own quite well. It's like structurally sound mm-hmm. to be just by itself.
Yeah. Well, let's go to number two.
Joyce Byers. So how is her storyline, how does that stand on its own compared to like how much more we get from her seasons mm-hmm. 2 through 4?
Yeah, and the Winona of it all too. If Stranger Things ends after one season, then I think one of the top things we remember about this like wonderful 8-hour movie is Winona Ryder as Joyce Byers.
Yeah. Her comeback, basically.
Yeah. And the performance is so good.
It's so real. And I find her, this is kind of where we differ. Mm-hmm. I think that her performance is so relatable. And I don't know, like, if it was just season one, I find her relatable, but I could see a lot of people kind of thinking she was just this crazy mom. Yeah. So I do really appreciate that we get so much more with seasons 2 through 4. I think that definitely grows her character, makes her love her that much more. Mm. But yes, if it was season one, her crazy acting would definitely be much yeah. more memorable, I think, maybe.
Yeah, I guess you touch on it there, like we grow to love her and know her more over the yeah. seasons. I think that actually hurts the performance in a way, because now that we know Joyce Byers really, really well, we absolutely know she's not going to fall for Lonnie's, you know, BS
yeah.
gaslighting stuff. We know that she's going to continue to fight for Will no matter what, that she right. truly believes the lights. And when the phone fries, she knows it's not the storm. But when you are first watching it, the audience, we are unsure. Is this lady crazy? You know, like there is an element of Joyce against the world.
Yeah.
That you're worried she's going to crack, that she's going to fall and not be able to keep pushing through. Once you know Joyce, you know it's not going to happen. And that takes some of the drama out of it. And these are like really like minuscule critiques. I have no, they had to do it, but.
I mean, I have to say, this is coming from having seen all 4 seasons. Maybe I would think differently yeah. if we had just gotten the season one. But like I kind of said, I do find her performance very relatable. First, she starts off as this mom that's like strung so thin. She has to work so much to support her 2 boys as a single mom. Mm-hmm. And so she doesn't have time to give them as much attention as she would like. She's always frazzled. And then her son goes missing. And it's like she became untethered. And, you know, rewatching, I forget how much they mention, like, how she had had a previous breakdown and mm-hmm. had kind of, like, yeah. been a little crazy.
Right.
But, like, that even more makes her, like, her behavior understandable. I could see a mom acting in that way had their son completely disappeared. And maybe it wouldn't be so crazy for her to like think that he's truly there and there's a monster coming after him. I don't know. Having seen seasons 2 through 4, I find her even more relatable. But maybe if we had only seen season 1, I would think she's a little more crazy.
Yeah. I look forward to talking a lot more about that with the Joyce podcast. But I don't necessarily agree that she's super relatable. I think there's a lot of moms in that situation who would close up, mourn, and go dead inside, rightfully so, with that traumatic experience. She is just, her superpower is her absolute certainty that Will is alive.
Oh, and you do see that as a superpower further on because she's certain that other things are going wrong.
She's
and
absolute.
She nails it every time.
She is the MVP of season two.
Yeah.
But it's just a less is more situation. Same as the Upside Down. If we don't know so much about Joyce, that overcoming that obstacle of the whole town against her and everybody against her, it just resonates more.
Right. Yeah. Well, how about the Hopper Sarah arc? Ooh. I don't know. I think this one really holds its own. And this is another thing we kind of disagree on a little bit.
Well, I think, you go ahead.
So with Hopper and his daughter, Sarah, especially when you get further on near the end of the season, it is so impactful to me to see like how he's mourning the loss of his daughter and how he's processing it in the event of saving Will Byers.
Yeah.
Like, it is incredibly moving. It makes you just absolutely love Hopper so much. And that's why we love seasons 2 through 4 so much, I think, because you get to develop that character even more. But I think if it was just season 1, this absolutely could stand alone. It's so impactful. Like, it doesn't necessarily need more for us to love Hopper. Yeah. I loved Hopper by the end of season 1.
Okay.
I think he was my favorite.
I think he was. I think we have evidence of that on our previous podcast when you say that. I think the thing that you said disagree. I don't know that I disagree with. I think I just wasn't as tuned to it as you were. If there's only season 1, the whole Sarah thing and Will Byers thing is touching and everything. But watching it in the context of his relationship with Eleven over the course of seasons 2, 3, and 4, because I'm just a dumb guy who's not as good with feelings, once I've seen that hole in his life be filled by Eleven and his daughter and his protectiveness over her, going back and seeing back when it was, I mean, he was lost. He was a wanderer. He was taking pills. He was just a jerk.
Yeah.
He was completely lost and distraught over the loss of his daughter. When you're watching that in the context of, I mean, I don't know if this is making sense. When you're watching in the context of what he does get with Eleven.
Yeah.
I mean, they truly get to a point where they are father and daughter.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Oh gosh, and me too.
And watching
you get
Sarah.
To see his healing process.
Yeah. Do you know about the bracelet?
So
there's like a little bracelet that's on Sarah's wrist at the end of in the flashbacks, in the finale of season 1.
Right. Okay.
We see that bracelet pop up on Eleven.
No.
So it does. We don't. There's no scene where he gives it to her. It just comes to her at some point in season 2, and she's got it on season 3, and she's still got it on in season 4.
No, I never noticed that.
And I love that. We don't need to see it.
Oh, you're going to make me tear up.
Kathleen is literally crying right now.
Oh, my gosh.
I'll show you the posts about it. And it's just a bunch of arrows pointing to it. And I love that we don't have this scene where Hopper's like, this was my daughter's.
Yeah,
here
it
you go.
Definitely wouldn't be as... Like, to me, it's so shocking. I never even noticed that. And to learn that just in this moment is just, oh, my gosh. Yeah. Well, just melt your heart.
Yeah. And remember, he forgets to even tell Eleven about Sarah.
Yeah.
Like he forgets. They go like a
when
year.
When does he tell her?
I think it's after she runs away.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. So and they take that next step.
Oh, and they're in the car on the way back. Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
They take that next step. So
yeah.
I think this was actually better on rewatch because of the later seasons, because I just didn't quite tune into it on its own.
Well, I think more is always better, so we're all happy that we got more Stranger Things.
Yeah.
But I also think that season 1, it didn't need any more. Mm-hmm. Like, it could have been easily a standalone with that amount. We didn't need any more backstory.
Yeah.
In fact, it could have even, like, kind of ruined it a little bit if we had more Hopper, Sarah dynamic.
Yeah, they're very good about not overdoing an emotion, trusting the audience, which I like. Now, sometimes they do these flashbacks, which I don't like, but that's a whole nother story that no one else agrees with me on. But yeah, all of this is a thought experiment, folks. Obviously, our main point is we want seasons 2, 3, and 4 to exist. Just a thought experiment.
Yes.
All right, you want to take us to number 4?
Ooh, God. gosh, this one. Eleven's sacrifice. So basically that she would have truly died in season one. Or I don't think that necessarily that means that she really did die.
No, yeah.
It's just that she disappeared. So again, it's ambiguous, kind of like the Upside Down. We don't have to have all the answers, but we never see her return. It just ends with, you know, the boys playing Dungeons and Dragons and she's not there.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I think of that as her death. I mean, because she evaporates into the Demogorgon mist, you know, and if the Demogorgon is gone, then she's gone. You know, that's what you think in that moment.
Yeah. Well, my opinion is, first off, this is one of my favorite scenes in all of Stranger Things, seasons 1 through 4. This scene of her sacrificing herself is incredibly impactful. I mean, I talked about the Sarah Hopper thing being incredibly impactful, but this moment, it just hits you hard. And every single time we rewatch it, I just sob. I absolutely sob. I think it doesn't need any more. I think that season one would have been okay with her disappearing. It doesn't in any way ruin Stranger Things to have her gone. I think that they could have spun it that, like, they could have even given hints that she's not all the way gone. They could have ended it that way.
Oh, I mean, I am just, if she dies there, it's one of the greatest endings of all time.
Yes.
If she disappears there, and this girl from this lab who had no business understanding love and friendship, doesn't even know the word friendship, and she puts this sacrifice on there because she just inherently knows the good in Mike and the good in Lucas and the good in Dustin.
And she understands love.
And sacrifices herself, you know, Tony Stark style or Spock in the Wrath of Khan style, and sacrifices herself for them because the Demogorgon's in the room and he's going to kill them. And I mean, that's one of the greatest endings of all time.
It would have been
absolutely
epic. Yes.
And so you were left to wonder, who was this girl? How did she have this goodness in her heart? How did she connect with these little boys? And then she made that sacrifice at the end. That's absolutely incredible. If that's the only Stranger Things we get, season one, that's incredible.
And the thing is, we all would have been so pissed that that's all we got. Absolutely. Like, we're not going to get any more. She's just gone and she's dead. Oh. But the reason we would have been so pissed is because it was so good.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Such a good point. I'm only able to sit here and say it's incredible because it didn't happen.
Yes.
I would be pissed. I mean, it definitely couldn't continue. If she died, it ends. 11 is the main character. End of story.
Yeah. Agreed. All right. Well, how about the Nancy, Jonathan, Steve dynamic?
Number 5.
If it ended in season one, would Jonathan need to end up with Nancy for it to be good?
Yeah. I mean, for it to be good, I like it both ways, but it's all the trope, right?
Right.
In the 80s, every movie had the jock, you know, who is Steve, who is a jerk and doesn't understand the girl he's with and how great she is, and the weirdo, Jonathan, who does appreciate the girl and gets her at the end when she finally realizes that.
Yeah.
So I could see an argument that Jonathan and Nancy need to get together at the end of season one to tidy up that bow.
Yeah.
But I could also see an argument that they could subvert that expectation, because that's kind of a messed up thing that that the weirdo is always better than the jock. And like, where's Nancy's say in all this? Like,
right.
I like that Steve actually saves the day.
Oh God. Yeah. We really like Steve by the end of this.
Yeah.
Steve is so much better for having seasons 2 through 4.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad we have that. And I think, okay, first off with Steve, let me divert a little bit here. Mm-hmm. I think we would have been left wanting for the Steve timeline or storyline if it just ended in that, because we did start to love him. I mean, they were going to kill him off, right? Or they were going to like discontinue him, but he was such a like great character that they decided to keep him on. Mm. I think that's how we would feel if it ended in just season one. We would feel like that was left incomplete. So maybe that's something that I don't think would work quite as well if we only had season one.
Yeah.
But I don't think that Nancy necessarily needed to get with Jonathan, but I think it should have ended with her giving Jonathan the gift and him opening it in the car. And then they just cut the scene with her and Steve. So we don't know if they actually do end up together, but we don't know if she ends up going back to Steve.
Yeah. If season one was it, the less is more vague ending is more appealing.
Because then we as an audience can kind of decide what happens from there.
Yeah. And we don't want to do that. We want to know.
No, we want more. This is, again, it's not saying that we want it to just be season one. We all wanted seasons two through four.
I'm really interested in the Steve stuff that you were talking about. I think that it is complete in that Steve, you know, he runs back into that house.
Yeah.
Grabs the bat and beats the Demogorgon. He makes that choice to be the hero. And so his arc is complete and is what it ends up being later, just on a much, much, much smaller scale.
Yeah.
We get to know Steve, and he does much bigger gestures and bigger things, especially season two. Well, especially all the other seasons. But he does do it a little bit.
Yeah. I think we would have been left wanting to know him more, though.
We probably wouldn't
even... unsatisfied that we didn't get more heroics from him.
We wouldn't even really think about Steve that much in terms of season one or Stranger Things. Because, like, I told you about the Reddit post where everyone voted for, like, 35 days on the best character.
Oh, yeah.
And Steve won.
Which is so
Steve
crazy.
Steve was the best character, which, I mean, it should be 11, but whatever. I voted for 11. But that would not happen if season one is it. Steve is a footnote at the end there. And, I like your answer. Nancy gives the camera to Jonathan. She had her, you know, her somewhat makeup with Steve after pointing the gun at him, you know. And we're just kind of left to wonder. I like that.
Yeah. All right, so why don't you do the next one?
Number six, Lucas the Skeptic. So watching season one, I was really struck by how unfleshed out the character of Lucas was.
And I agree.
So a lot of the things we've been talking about, like what if season one was it, we're like, hey, you know, it gives opportunity a little bit, less is more. Lucas needs the other seasons to fill it out. Rewatching it with all the stuff that happens in season four, you really feel more for Lucas than you did originally watching.
Really? You absolutely do. I mean, I've talked about this before, that Lucas was, not that I disliked Lucas, but that he was probably my least favorite out of the group. And I think because maybe I didn't find him as relatable. But he became one of my favorite characters, especially by season four. My all-time favorite Stranger Things scene is with him holding Max after she's almost died, basically. Wow. Like, that is my favorite scene. And to not have that, it just seems so wrong to not have it. I know, that's dark.
A dark favorite.
It's so dark. But it's not like I'm like, ooh, yay, this is my favorite part. It's more like it had the biggest impact on me. And like, Lucas became this whole like new character to me. Mm-hmm. But before in season one, I understood his character, but I couldn't relate to him as much because he's a very logical thinker, which I'm not really. But you like see his character grow so much more. You see more of that loyalty. You see his understanding of Max and how they connect.
Yeah.
Like, oh man, I think season one, like you said, would have been lacking. I know I was talking about like we needed more Steve stuff. We needed more Lucas stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Way more with Lucas. He kind of, the lesson he learns from season one and his unacceptance of 11 is that he becomes a much more accepting person. Yes, he's the very logical thinker. He's the neutral thinker. He's going to take in the information, not make preconceived judgments.
Which is a good thing, honestly.
And the new foil for him is Max, who has, you know, her awesomeness, her opinions, her force of nature. He's open to that.
Yeah.
Because of the events of season one. I like how it fits, but we don't really get to see much of that I feel like that's kind of one of the reasons they added Max in, is to allow this other foil for these characters to play off. Of course, Max is like my second favorite character, but
I know. Yeah, and then, you know, if it did end with season one, we wouldn't have Max at all.
Isn't that crazy?
I mean, always we wouldn't know that we didn't have her, but still, knowing that now that we wouldn't have her if it did end up with season one, it just seems unacceptable, right?
Stranger Things without Max Mayfield. Yeah, that's just wrong. Yeah. That is just wrong.
Agreed.
So Lucas would definitely be more fleshed out, and his relationship with Max definitely informs a lot of the stuff you watch in season one now, and I love it. Dustin is another one who... He also isn't fully fleshed out in season one. Lucas is the skeptic. Dustin is, you know, the smart comic relief for the Mike and Eleven story. That's really all there was time to do in season one.
Yeah.
So fleshing that character out a lot more, Dustin's a tough one because he's kind of the voice of the audience. You know, he's the one who both explains everything to us. He's the one who explains upside down to us, the Veil of Shadows.
Yeah. Allows us to understand what's going on.
Yeah, he's the one who figures out how to build a sensory deprivation tank from Mr. Clark. Thank you, Dustin, for not
gotta love
that
Mr.
curiosity
Clark.
Door. I think that Dustin is still in line for a Lucas-like revelation of a deeper character. I think Eddie's death is going to bring that and inform a little bit more with season one. I don't think we've quite gotten to the
meat of Dustin.
I feel like Dustin is a nerd even within the nerd circles. Like, he's so smart and so confident and so geeky.
Like, they're all smart, but he is like incredibly intelligent.
And he you see that the snowball, everyone has a dance, he doesn't. You know, everybody's off with their girlfriends and stuff like that. And he's not in season three. Of course, he's got Susie and he's radioing to her. But he's kind of like Will. He's a little bit behind. He's a little bit on the outside sometimes. I think we're going to see more of that in season five, facilitated by Eddie's death.
So I agree with you. And I love how much more we get of Dustin. But I also don't think that we needed more to have season one stand alone really well.
Yeah.
I think we had enough to like get a broad understanding of what his character was supposed to be for season one, and that it could have like completely worked, could have ended with everything we got about Dustin. I'm very happy that we had seasons two through four, because he has definitely grown, maybe not to the extent as Lucas has in my mind, because I just love Lucas. But yeah, like we just get so much more, and we can all agree more is better. We want more Stranger Things.
We really click with Dustin's like essence early on. I agree with that.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So I think pretty much in general, season one being it would be a negative. Okay. We should have the other seasons. We will not abolish them from all of Netflix and all of your memories out there.
Yes, but also one of the reasons that season one is one of my favorites is that it could be so good as just a standalone.
It would really be like one of the great movies of all time. I know it's 8 hours long, but people would point to it because of the way all the arcs fill in together, the music, the aesthetic, the homages to make this new story. It's very King, it's very Spielberg. It would be like this thing on a hill that critics adore, and fans would love it too.
Yeah.
But what brings the fans even more is the extra seasons.
I mean,
season three is amazing.
Yeah.
And I love season two, season three, and season four, of course.
We love all of it. I think it would have been like a, you know, people were pissed that Firefly ended. Mm-hmm. People were pissed with Freaks and Geeks. People would have been so upset that we didn't get more Stranger Things. Mm. But I think that Stranger Things is even more impactful than Freaks and Geeks and Firefly.
Yeah, I think I agree. It definitely was huge at the time that it was airing.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it didn't air. It just showed up one weekend in June 2016.
We're just like, what is this? We should watch it.
You know, something we didn't even mention. Oh, well, we used it as an explanation in all of our different reasons, but the ending is so sturdy.
Yes.
That's why we can even have this conversation. It is truly an ending.
Yeah.
And could have absolutely been done.
Yeah.
Actually, season 2 and 3 could have also ended the series nicely.
See, that's the beauty of it. Yeah. I love that aspect.
I know I read one time that they think of these as movies. Stranger Things 1, Stranger Things 2, Stranger Things 3. These are their own movies, you know, that could be the end if they had to be.
I mean, I kind of think of it that way too, except for maybe when we get to season 4 and it's so long. Like it's at that point, it's no longer like a movie to me. But I do kind of agree. It is almost like their own movies.
Season 4 is the most television season of Stranger Things because it's all a setup. It's more like if it's a movie, it's Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1.
Yes.
Like if it's any movie, it's that movie.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. 100% agree with that. All right. So why don't we do a final question here? Did knowing the 1979 flashback story from season 4 change your views of the 11 story in season 1?
Well, my answer is actually not really. It didn't really affect the way I watched season 1 as much as I thought it would. Partly because 4 years have passed, and partly because Eleven herself doesn't remember any of that.
Mm.
So it didn't like affect me hugely watching season 1. What about you?
Hard disagree.
Okay.
Hard disagree, especially going back and rewatching season 1 since watching season 4. I can't see things the same way. I'm looking at the upside down and it's completely different to me now knowing what happens in season 4. Season 1 is still beloved for me, but I'm almost like trepidatious on what we're going to get in season 5. Like, please don't ruin this for me. I'm already a little on edge from everything that we learned in season 4. It's completely changed what the upside down is. It's no longer this like just reverse of the right side up. Like, I don't know. It's changed a ton for me.
I think the upside down is the thing that has aged the worst because of the extra seasons. Yeah. The other things, they've done a remarkable job consistency-wise. Yeah. I forgot to mention it, but Steve, Lucas, Dustin, although we desire to see them more fleshed out, it fits perfectly. They had those characters from the very beginning.
Yeah.
From the first episode, they've had them.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I can see where you're coming from in that sense because we just know that extra information. But I guess along the journey with Eleven, I felt like, okay, I'm in Eleven's frame of mind where she doesn't remember that stuff and Mike and them have no idea about it.
I agree with that. I do feel like the Eleven, it doesn't change anything with Eleven because like you said, she doesn't remember. Mm-hmm. It's really the upside down and what the upside down represents and what it basically is. It's so different.
Yeah. The lab though, actually, now that you bring that up, the motivations of what they're doing in the lab
was
definitely different for me. Yeah,
because of Dr. Brenner, like what he's really after.
Yeah, I mean, he still doesn't know what a Demogorgon is. He doesn't know really what the upside down is. He just knows he looked at a wall one time in 1979 and there were like vines going inside of it. And he's chasing that.
Yeah.
So we kind of figured he was chasing something when we first watched season 1. But
right.
To know what it is and to know that he knows there's an element of danger, which is that Henry may still be out there, the guy with powers, and to still push, you know, not that we needed any hints that he was a total jerk.
No, absolutely not.
What about Brenner's death? Does Brenner's death in season 1, did you ever feel like that? Did that get muted a little bit because he comes back in season 4?
Actually, no. I thought it was really cool that they brought him back. I thought it added like a really awesome layer to season 4. That was definitely not something that I was disappointed in.
Yeah, me neither. In fact, watching the scene, it seems like he doesn't die. Now that I know he didn't die, the Demogorgon is like what's that? And like clearly like runs over him on his way to chase, you know, everything else.
Yeah, we don't truly see him completely die.
It seems like it doesn't see him and runs over him because we see it from the view of the Demogorgon and it's just like blowing right past him. So, I mean, people who say like, we watched Brenner die. No, we didn't. We watched Brenner get stomped on.
Yeah, but trampled. Not his actual death.
Yeah. Well, I guess the final question is done.
And we agree to disagree.
Agree to disagree. I love when we disagree, though.
I know, I do too. Makes good. Add some spice.
Yeah, add some spice.
All right. Well, thank you, listeners, for tuning in on us today as we review season one. And what if it was just a standalone?
What if? All right. You want me to do the music for She'll Kill You?
No.
I probably can't.
I don't think the listeners want that either.
No. All right. Well, thanks everybody for tuning in. We'll be back with our 11 episodes, one character at a time, their journey through seasons one through four.
Make sure to follow us so you can see when they're released.
Hey-o, good night.
Good night.